Now on News Talk, as part of our winter season of documentary on News Talk, Angie Mazzetti looks at the banking sector in Ireland through a gendered lens, talking to experts in Ireland, London and Oslo about the sustainability of the banking system. She questions if its future is banking on women.
But we're in a different phase now, you know? Oh, we are, yeah. And how did you arrive at that?
Just someone would say, pick it out of my heart, you know?
When men get together and that testosterone surge happens, the debate can go in a certain way.
Waking up to the American investment bank Lehman Brothers has filed for bankruptcy in New York. That's happened in the last few minutes.
If Lehman Brothers had been a little bit more Lehman sisters and brothers, we would not have had the degree of tragedy that we had as a result of what happened.
That if you don't look for gender in the story, you're not going to see the full story. And if you don't see the full story, you're not going to be able to learn the full range of lessons that might be learned.
So what is the full story? What are the lessons we can learn about banking and gender? And what can we learn from other countries who weathered the financial crisis better than Ireland did? Who can we look to for a roadmap of how we might have handled the issue of gender balance in banking and financial services so that our catastrophic crisis never happens again?
A strong amount of evidence that suggests that businesses tend to be more successful and fail less where they have more diverse boards, management structures and so on. And the evidence is sufficiently strong for it to be of interest from a banking supervision perspective.
Research from McKinsey Global Institute, they noted that $12 trillion could be added to global GDP by 2025 by advancing gender equality. So the statistics are there, the reality is there. It's really about the reluctance to face up to the fact that time will not change it alone.
Well, in Norway, a pure stick approach was chosen for this issue. And it worked.
I think the only people who could lose out at all from having more women on boards are those who were perpetuating the culture that drove us into the kind of banking crisis that we had in the first instance.
I do think that there is a macho culture around money that men do, because of their competitive nature, look to earn more money. Again, it's not a crime, but if you don't have any system to control it or to examine it, you will pay the price.
When it came to reporting and analysing of the Irish banking crisis, there was no official look at the role of gender, although it was obvious to at least 51% of the population. Where were the women when the crisis hit?
It's related to where women are in power structures generally in a patriarchal society.
Dr. Mary Murphy is a lecturer in Irish politics and society in NUI Maynooth.
But we know, for example, that one in every 29 women who's working in Ireland is connected to a high street bank. So a lot of women are working in the lower to middle bureaucratic kind of jobs in banking, but they don't translate through to the top. And they don't translate particularly through to key aspects of banking governance, like they don't sit on banking boards, they don't become the chair people, and they don't become the CEO. So when you look at that kind of data, you can see very clearly there was never a CEO of an Irish bank who was a woman. There was one chairperson. And if you look at the boards of the individual banks, you rarely get more than 10% of those boards being made up of women. And in some instances, you get no women at all on the boards, which is quite incredible but true.
In recent times, however, as international studies and reports identify the key role of diversity, especially by gender in banking, the Central Bank of Ireland is looking more at this aspect.
Part of my role is to look at the sustainability of business models and banks. It's a cornerstone of our supervisory approach.
Ed Sibley is the Director of Credit Institutions Supervision at the Central Bank of Ireland.
And so considering the factors that impact on long-term sustainability of business models and banks is important. There is evidence that diversity has a role to play or is a factor. In fact, significant experts, including Christine Lagarde, head of the IMF, has stated that gender diversity or the lack of gender diversity was a contributing factor to the recent financial crisis. So I think it is important. I think that there's work from a supervisory perspective that we consider. I look at it that we're moving, certainly in Ireland, from crisis management to crisis prevention. We're still dealing with the legacy of the crisis here in Ireland. but we need to be looking more and more from a prevention perspective. As we move into that crisis prevention mode, then I think thinking about diversity, the impacts that has on underlying culture, governance arrangements within firms, I think becomes much more interesting and important.
What was it that Einstein said? The definition of stupidity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. International research says a minimum of 30% of any underrepresented group is necessary to make an impact.
A lot of change has been introduced as a result of banking union. Corporate governance, I think, in the context of this is quite different.
Professor Blawnith Clark is McCann Fitzgerald Chair of Corporate Law in Trinity College Dublin and a leading expert on corporate governance. She was appointed in 2010 to the board of the Irish Central Bank Commission.
Even before the Troika programme, there was an acknowledgement, and I think Matthew Elderfield has to be congratulated for identifying and reacting so quickly to corporate governance. He said that whilst there were corporate governance issues in lots of jurisdictions, that perhaps the fact that we were a very small jurisdiction and with a very sort of tight board structure, the concentrated nature of corporate life is how he described it. And he said perhaps this did exacerbate it. That's where diversity is relevant. That's where a challenging, independent board. And by definition, if you bring more women onto boards, you have more independence on boards. And I think that's something that's hugely important. So I think there's been a huge sea change since the crisis.
Major global financial institutions such as Barclays and BNY Mellon have been giving a lot of time to looking at the importance and impact of gender diversity, and they see it as a key to reducing risk by avoiding groupthink.
If you're dealing with 50% and 50% in terms of a discussion, that you are looking at something on a balanced basis.
Carol Andrews is Global Head of Prime Custody and Client Services with BNY Mellon. She works on the hedge fund side, leading a team of 150 people worldwide, managing $750 trillion of assets across five continents.
For the most part, if you're dealing with a group of people that are 100% one way or 100% the other, it doesn't bring a balance in a discussion. So groupthink can often happen when you have very similar people together. So I think that it's more about balance rather than women bringing something different. So if you have gender balance across the board, you can achieve parity and you can achieve real discussion and avoid that risk.
Diversity and inclusion have continued to be among the highest rated areas in BNY Mellon's Global Employee Engagement Survey.
43% of our global workforce are women. 27% of our managing directors globally are women. So for us, it's very important to continue to develop the pipeline in terms of resource groups and in terms of supporting people and their career choices.
Carol also believes that this is being driven by investors and says that US companies are increasingly calling for greater gender diversity on boards, that it is being seen as the gold standard for corporate governance in well-run companies.
Gender diversity at executive and board level is becoming accepted as part of good corporate governance. The level of investor discussion is rising. Diverse groups have well-rounded views, and recent institutional investors filed shareholder resolutions with 20 cross-industry US companies that lacked balanced board membership. A good example in Ireland is the 30% Club, where we have 140 CEO and chair supporters, and this is evidence that it's a key part of business in the future.
Carol Andrews, through her work on the steering committee of the 30% Club, believes it's vital to involve men in the task.
It's not a hard sell to men because we're able to show the evidence and the research. And the evidence and the research is clear from a P&L perspective in terms of performance. Your firm performs better when there's gender balance. The Central Bank of Ireland, as a regulator, expects company to have diversity as a policy. And in March of this year, there was a voluntary charter on women in financial services, which was released by HM Treasury. A number of high-profile firms have signed up, including ourselves, BNY Mellon, PwC, HSBC, Lloyds. And the purpose is to encourage industry action by encouraging every organisation to look at themselves critically. So to understand the statistics of your firm, think about your organisation, look at the number and be transparent. So to look at a senior executive who's responsible and accountable for gender balance, not somebody in shared services. So somebody who's accountable for tracking the P&L, true transparency and tracking your personal targets in the business. So don't be afraid of sharing the detail. Reporting the targets, make a statement on diversity, name the executive, update the progress and give the metrics. So it's really asking you, rather than looking at an audit, really asking to look at yourselves critically and be committed to the change. It is absolutely about the sustainability of the bank, so that we are looking at the commercials. Much research has shown from our perspective that a gender-balanced organisation will ensure that profit and loss will be sustainable into the future, so it will ensure a robust model for the future.
A report by the European Banking Authority this July on the benchmarking of diversity practices shows that of the 23 institutions they surveyed, over 69.5% had a diversity policy in place in Ireland. This compares well with, say, Greece at 20%, Portugal at 54%, but is nowhere near Sweden at 93%. But having a policy is one thing, what the policy says is another, and implementing a policy is another step again.
Now, if you look at some of the recent reports on that, and a very stark report produced by the OECD in terms of women in leadership suggested that if you leave it to natural progression, if you don't introduce certain measures, it will take 81 years to achieve gender parity in terms of board leadership. And that's clearly not acceptable. So something has to be done.
So why look back at the financial crisis with a gendered lens? Would having women more centrally involved in lending in the banks or in regulation make any difference? The internationally accepted thinking now is that it absolutely does. In the UK, Barclays Bank have hardwired gender diversity into their management structure, and each head of their major divisions takes responsibility for an aspect of diversity.
There are five key areas. It's gender, disability, LGBT, which is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, multicultural, and multigenerational. A few years ago, those or similar pillars were reported through our citizenship lens and our citizenship report. They have moved into the Barclays annual report because diversity is part of our overall scorecard at Barclays. So it is a business imperative. It is how we measure ourselves looking at progress.
Mark McLean is Global Head of Diversity and Inclusion for Barclays Bank, based in London.
80% of all purchases are made or influenced by women. And that was our mantra when I worked for a consumer products goods company. If that's not enough to define the power of the purse, if you need more, go look at the research. All the data is there.
Barclays have studied how differently the sexes behave with money over their lifetimes, and this has led key business initiatives.
Look, men and women save differently. They view wealth accretion very differently because they have different goals. Saving over time, having products that flex to be able to understand each consumer's outcome is very important.
The leadership of women and the numbers of women on boards is also driving innovation in investment decisions.
Last year, we launched an investment vehicle in New York that tracks companies who are traded on the New York Stock Exchange who have 25% or more of their board are women and or have a female CEO. They're outpacing the market. So we've taken the business case for diversity around women, and we've produced an investment vehicle by which our corporate investors can now invest in that group of companies. Right? There's innovation that's also diversity driven. So yes, we are continuing to expand our product line and become more and more sensitive to who our consumers are. And that's not just in wealth, but that's also in retail banking.
Mark McLean says that diversity is not just a matter for the top brass in the bank, and he also says it has to be measured.
How do you embed that? You have to measure it. You have to have it be a leadership expectation. And it, you know, everyone says it has to start at the top. I believe it has to start at the top and the bottom and meet, right? It has to be systemic across the organization.
One of the ways they do this is by having measurable targets.
So women in leadership is part of Barclays Leadership Scorecard. And every business has a contribution goal to us achieving 26% of women in senior leadership by 2018. That may not sound like a lot, but we've defined senior leadership as managing director and director, which is the top two layers of Barclays. So that's 8,000 jobs today that we're looking at, not the top 100 or the top 200 or just our board or just our exco, all of that together.
The European Commission and the European Banking Authority have been pushing the discussion in the direction of looking at the composition of boards and executive leadership. But Ireland has been slow to focus on this aspect, according to Mary Murphy.
On foot of their understanding of the research, the European Commission were very clear to include in their capital requirement directive an aspect of trying to reform corporate governance and banking by bringing in a target for gender composition of boards. So they're taking it very, very seriously. The international literature, the academic world takes it very seriously. The Treasury in London, for example, in 2010 brought out a similar type of analysis. And what strikes me as really curious about the Irish world is we simply are not talking at all about gender and the composition of gender when it comes to the corporate governance of finance and banking, even though the findings from around the world suggest, yes, it is an issue.
However, in the UK and in Europe, the issue of gender and corporate governance is a hot topic.
Probably the leading corporate governance code internationally is the UK Corporate Governance Code, and it has made huge steps towards increasing disclosure of recruitment policy. There's a requirement to have a nominations committee, and the nominations committee should indicate how they are dealing with the issue of diversity. Even in Ireland, we have our own corporate governance code for regulated banks. And this code was first introduced in 2010, and it's been updated then most recently in 2015. It suggests that there should be a written policy on diversity with regard to selecting people for the board.
Professor Blonath Clark says that it's not just at board level that change needs to take place.
Middle management is where we're losing most of the people. So if you look at the statistics of people entering into the financial services industry, for example, you've got an equal number of people coming in, about 50-50 percentage. But when you look at mid-management, you've lost about half of them. So that's where you have to ask, why are you losing people at that stage? Why are we not providing sufficient response to deal with the issues? And it's more than just saying it's a question of remedying childcare. It's a question of providing state funding for childcare. It's more than that. And this is back to the idea that you need a holistic response.
While maternity leave and the cost of childcare are factors in holding women's careers back in banking, as in other careers, there are often assumptions made without any basis in fact.
The idea that women opt out in many cases isn't true at all. They will frequently want to come back if there is a role that will allow them participate in sort of structured promotion and reward. And often they find, and it's a terrible term, but it's an American term, which is they find they've been mommy tracked, is what the Americans described it as. So you have women who've had these hugely important, fascinating jobs, and then they come back and they find that they're sidetracked.
Still to come, how they do things in Norway, where they have a 40% quota of either gender on the boards of all public companies.
You're listening to Banking on Women on Newstalk 106 to 108.
When Dvorak travelled to America in 1893 and composed the New World Symphony, it celebrated a bustling economy fueled by immigration and the expansion of the railroads. And yet, shortly after his composition was performed to a rapturous audience, there was a huge banking crisis where hundreds of banks and savings societies went belly up. It wasn't the last banking collapse. And as the decades rolled through, there was the Great Depression, and there has been a cycle of boom and bust economic and banking crashes. and managing them doesn't get any easier. One country, however, that has managed to come through the most recent crisis less damaged than the rest of Europe is Norway. And women have played a role in minimising risk factors, both on the management and regulatory side.
We do not believe in light regulation. And we didn't believe in it before, and we don't believe in it now. And I think that that has served us well. We think about these things differently.
Karen Helen Alfvedt-Moe is a member of the executive board of the Norwegian Central Bank. She's also a professor of economics at Oslo University.
We learned quite a bit in the 90s. We had our own banking crisis in the beginning of the 90s, which was very serious, which caused lots of problems, both for individuals, and meant that the number of banks ran into trouble and went bust. So that taught us kind of how to deal with banks that kind of are not able to survive on their own. What we did here was that all the owners, the original owners, were wiped out. And then the state took over and injected money, funds, so that a bank could go on. But then as an owner. So the government secured a proper return on the funds that were provided for the banks and made sure that it was not the taxpayers who were actually picking up the bill, but the original owners of the bank. And that is kind of something that was regarded as a very correct way of proceeding, a good way of proceeding from the perspective of the society.
Norway's experience with their own banking crisis in the 90s was a huge learning experience for them that served them well. So too was the more egalitarian or more equal society that they've chosen to live in.
So we like to talk about the Norwegian model, and I think that there are many aspects of that model that are important in understanding also why we survived the financial crisis as well as we did. One of them is the fact that we are not a very macho society. We are kind of the opposite, I would say. We have paternity leave, we have quotas on females at the board, we have a very compressed wage schedule as such. Our bonus schemes and CEO compensation are way below what you find in other countries. And we want it that way. We are a rather egalitarian society. And I think that is right to say that, and we believe that that's a good thing. And it was still the same bureaucrats in charge in the Supervisory Council for the Financial Sector, in the Central Bank, in the Ministry of Finance, and they very well knew what to do as the crisis hit. And I also asked, we should, in a way, be very grateful because to these people who are not terribly well paid and who did a great job.
Another aspect which is credited with saving the Norwegian banking system is that they have a gender quota on all boards of publicly quoted companies, a law that was brought in by a male cabinet minister.
Well, in Norway, a pure stick approach was chosen for this issue, and it worked.
Professor Beate Sjåfjell is professor of corporate law at the University of Oslo.
Well, in Norway, there was a discussion for many years about what we should do about the fact that there are so few female members on boards. There were quite a few people in favour of doing something about it, but there was also a strong resistance from business lobbyists who said that this would be better dealt with business and that it was not the position of legislators to tell the companies who would be best to have on the boards. So in the end, interestingly enough, it was a male minister of the government that we had in 2006 who conducted what could be seen as a coup by tabloids. because without discussing with anybody in the government, not even with the Prime Minister, he announced to one of the big tabloids in Norway that we are going to introduce a rule to ensure that there is 40% of each gender on the boards of public companies.
What was the reaction to that?
Well, as Ansgar Gabrielsen, that's the name of the minister, as he himself has told to the newspapers later, he was called into the office of the Prime Minister as soon as the Prime Minister had said this, and the Prime Minister apparently practically had smoke coming out of his ears. But it was a successful coup in the sense that it was very difficult for anybody in the government then, including the Prime Minister, to say that, no, we are against this. So it was carried through. I think a part of the reason that it was possible to carry it through was that it was not seen as primarily a gender equality measure. It was seen as a necessary measure to improve the corporate governance of Norwegian public companies.
Norway brought in gender quotas of 40% of either gender through legislation, and the compliance rate quickly fell into line.
The compliance rate at the end of the day was 100%. Because companies knew, or the people running companies realized that if they didn't comply with this rule, at the end of the day, the company would actually be dissolved, which also shows that the Norwegian legislators took this seriously as a proper company law rule. It wasn't like just some soft corporate social responsibility initiative where please try to improve your gender diversity and please tell us how that is going. It was introduced as a hard law rule, in the same way as we have a rule that we have to have a board and that public companies have to have boards with at least three members, and that they have to send in their annual accounts. So it was treated as company law proper, which also emphasizes the fact that it was introduced as something that was meant to improve the way that companies were run. Because this was informed by the idea that if we have boards that are basically only made up of people from half of the population, then you're probably missing out on some talent. And in Norway, as probably in most countries, it wasn't like board members were selected from half of the grown male population. It was from a very specific area. So to put a point to it, although I'm being a bit unfair, then we could say that middle-aged white men from Oslo West were replaced by women through this rule.
The level of resistance, Professor Schoffel says, was not what they expected and had positive consequences.
Well, companies could have circumvented this rule without the company being dissolved if they had just expanded the board and added female members in addition to the male members that they had. But they didn't do that. So they actually replaced men with women. And word of the mouth is that mediocre men were replaced by more competent women. Because as generally often in business life, to become a board member, a woman has to be at least as good as the men who are already there. And it also improved diversity in other ways, because one had to look a little bit further than the normal circles. So apparently Swedish and Danish female board members were invited into Norwegian boards, so that also helped open up.
Did you end up, though, with a very small pool of very busy women? So you had one woman on three or four boards. Mm. And, you know, how is the pipeline progression for that going to go?
Well, I think we probably, as we have with men, as we've always had with men, we now also have women who are very busy sitting on boards. But I have no indication that's a bigger problem for female board members than it is for men.
Despite the claims from business that quotas on boards would be a disaster, Professor Schoffel says that dominant patterns can be so strong that it takes tough measures and strong legislators to correct them.
I think you can learn from that business will object very, very strongly. And they'll say that it's going to mean the end of business and there will be no businesses left in your country. Everybody will flag out, find another nicer country to register their businesses in, and that will be a disaster. And that if legislators then stand firm and actually do this, then it won't be that disaster. We've only had this rule in Norway for a few years, and when I speak to mainstream corporate lawyers now, they say that it's been completely accepted and that they don't see any problem with it at all. But I think it also illustrates that sometimes the domination of one gender, in this case male, and the path-dependent way of selecting board members, that is so strong that you actually need a hard law to break that.
If Ireland is to learn from the financial crisis, we could do well to learn from the Norwegian experience, not only from their use of gender quotas, but also from their alignment of interests of the taxpayer and their tough stance on regulation. Norway is not in the euro area, but complies to similar regulation.
What characterised the financial crisis was that before it happened, there were groups of people who reaped huge benefits. And as it hit, they did not have to suffer big losses, because the losses were suffered by the taxpayers in many, many countries. So in order to avoid that, we need alignment of interest, and we need kind of schemes that are robust and make sure that people do not set out along this route of making too risky investments.
Professor Beata Schoffer believes that we need to think about what we need to achieve and to ensure that it's dictated by people, not by specialist interests and lobbyists.
We'll always need rules. If we don't have rules, we don't have the law of the market, we have the law of the jungle. And as we've seen now, the financial crisis have shown us, Panama Papers have shown us, the state of the world shows us that business and finance are really on a very, very wrong path. There's something systemically wrong here. So instead of having this dichotomy between hard regulation and the soft touch, we need to sit down and discuss properly what kind of rules do we need, what goals do we have, and what rules will achieve what we want to achieve. Hard regulation can be a really bad choice if it's the wrong kind of regulation. So we need a totally new debate, which needs to be not anymore just on the premises of the corporate lobbyists.
The Norwegian system isn't perfect, but as economics professor Alfred Moe believes, gender quotas have changed the thinking within companies' DNA in Norway.
There are still many more men in the management in the private sector than there are females. And we have had a debate about whether it's correct to kind of start somehow at the executive boards and whether we should have kind of started below and then brought it up. So I guess the belief, at least among quite a few of us, is that it will nevertheless help. It can also work down the other way. Having 40% females at the boards does something to the company and to the company's strategy, to their priorities, to their recruitment. So it's about kind of pushing from both ends.
A Norwegian government commission made up of a mix of academics, trade union representatives, employer associations and representatives from the financial sector was brought together to analyse the last banking crisis and report to the government. Professor Ultford Moe was on this commission.
There are no politicians at the commission. So we provide then an input that goes back to the, in this case, the Treasury, and then they write a paper to the Parliament then bringing some of our recommendations and further.
Some of the recommendations they made relate to the structure of bonus payments and capital requirements, and they're also discussing a value-added tax on the financial sector.
When we then or now have launched even stricter regulation of bonus payment, it's not based on our painful experience ourselves, but it's based on the observations abroad and thinking about a next possible crisis and preparing for that not happening.
In Ireland, we also had several reports in the aftermath of the financial crisis by experts like Honohan and Watson-Riegling and the Nyberg report. We also had the Oireachtas Banking Inquiry.
You know, a woman coming in to the bank inquiry to give evidence was, oh, look, there's a woman.
Susan O'Keefe is a former investigative journalist with the BBC. She was a former Labour Party senator in the last government and was the only woman to sit on the Oireachtas inquiry into the banking sector.
Side by side, we stand like brothers.
I think there were a lot of men who knew each other. who were friends with each other, who looked after each other, who brought people into boards that they knew from other businesses or from playing rugby or football. And they were a large club all of their own. Maybe they didn't realise that, but that's what they did do, and that was the outcome. They all looked remarkably similar. They all sounded remarkably similar. And there were hardly any women.
Even the terminology that they use, like putting on the green jersey.
Yeah, that's a real great expression that infuriates me always when I hear it mixed up with, you know, standing up for what's good in Ireland and what we want to see about Ireland, is that you pull on the green jersey. And that means you kind of have to do what the boys are doing and keep shtum when things aren't great. And I happen to think that's not always a good thing. So pulling on the green jersey is actually an expression that means stay quiet or you're off the team.
Dr. Mary Murphy says that the Oireachtas inquiry should have looked at the banking crisis through a gendered lens.
I think we missed some opportunities in the banking inquiry to take gender seriously. And I think had we done that, we might have had some recommendations in the banking inquiry that looked more forcefully at the role that gender equality could play in changing culture, or, for example, recommendations that looked at changing the degree to which our, for example, education institutions and where we're educating our future corporate governance actors and how that's being done in a very masculine culture as well.
O'Keefe says the inquiry showed there was a notable lack of women at the upper managerial ranks.
One of the unintended findings of the banking inquiry probably was that it showed very clearly that it is men who have succeeded in banking in Ireland rather than women. So while often as a customer in the bank you might have been served by a woman doing a good job and working hard, they never seemed to make it further up the ranks in the bank. Because if they had, we'd have seen them, and we didn't, nor did we hear their names mentioned. They seem to have been very much bastions of male corporates rushing to the top.
One of the findings of the banking inquiry was that huge salaries and bonuses were driving lending towards riskier projects.
If you leave it to self-regulate and you have a lot of men running the show, you will pay the price.
Dr. Mary Murphy questions whether this macho focus on short-term gain may be behind the resistance to women on boards.
If women are more likely to look towards the more long-term sustainable vision of society, of the economy and of the business, maybe they'd get in the way of short-term greed. And I sometimes wonder, is that some of the real resistance to having them on boards? That they would ask awkward questions that would counter a justification and a legitimation of a very unsustainable business model that's really only about short-term profit-making at the risk of deteriorating society's interest in more sustainable business practices.
Susan O'Keefe believes that Ireland will benefit by improving the pipeline of women into leadership positions at executive and board level.
I think that some of the banks will now look at their boards. I believe they will see that internationally they're out of step. And I believe that over the next 5 years we will see a change at board level in Irish banks. I believe too we will see some more women in senior ranks. But it's coming very slowly.
Right from the spark, we hit it all. I knew that someday we would break each other's heart.
When it comes to tackling the pipeline, the main Irish banks have a mixed report card. AIB, which is almost entirely state-owned, have been making serious inroads into improving the progress of women into senior leadership teams and on their board. 61% of their staff are female. Orla Hunt is a transformation and leadership consultant, and she's the former chief people officer with Allied Irish Bank. She was part of the drive to improve the pipeline of women into senior ranks in AIB.
I guess in the UK, the Lord Davis report kicked things off probably about a decade ago now with the focus on women on boards and the momentum that he managed to create around Comply or Explain. So it became quite uncomfortable as an organisation not to be making positive moves in terms of gender generally on boards, but also it started to address the issue around executive teams. When I came back to Ireland, the debate was less advanced, which I was surprised about. And so therefore, I do think there is policy work that is important that it gets done. But that will only take you so far, because truthfully, you can have the best policies in the world, but if that isn't the way it's lived, so if you have amazing flexibility policies, but everybody knows you'll never get promoted if you work flexibly, then people aren't going to choose to take up that policy. So the policy helps create the permission, and then it's about having a climate in terms of the way your leaders value things that actually mean that that is actually the experience people have at work.
Orla Hunt was involved in the introduction of several initiatives, and one area she focused on in particular in AIB was unconscious bias training.
It allows us to have a mature conversation that says all of us have biases. And if we can own that, then it's not about me being right or wrong. It's just me owning the prejudices that I might come with, being aware of them, and then particularly being aware of them when I'm going to make critical decisions. So studies have shown that you can reduce the impact of biases if A, people are aware of them, and B, if at critical decision-making moments like performance management appraisals, like promotion or pay, if people are reminded of the impact of the biases, I think it is tone from the top. This has to be a tone that's set by senior management. It has to be important. It has to be measured. What gets measured gets done. If it isn't on scorecards, then frankly, it's not going to happen at anything other than glacial speed.
Tuppence, prudently, thriftily, frugally invested in the,
to be specific,
in the Dawes, Tomes, Mousley, Grubbs, Fidelity, Fiduciary Bank.
AIB CEO Bernard Byrne is involved with the Irish chapter of the 30% Club. They're concentrating their focus at two levels. At board level, where they've committed to 25% representation by the end of 2016. They're currently at 20%. And this year, for the first time, as part of their business plan, they've also a target for all of their senior teams to have 30% representation by the end of 2018. As for Bank of Ireland, they declined the opportunity to engage, but they have a gender diversity target of 15% by 2016 on their website. Ulster Bank fares better. 64% of their staff are female, and they say they're determined to have a balanced workforce, particularly when it comes to better representation of gender at senior levels in the future. Their aspiration is to have more than 30% of their executive committee, and at the level below, made up of women. One area where Ulster Bank has been ahead of the other main banks is in supporting women entrepreneurs through their support of the Women's Executive Network and Ulster Bank's Business Women Can initiative. Bank of Ireland sponsor the NDRC's 2016 Female Founders Programme, an early stage investor in tech startups. They're also a sponsor of InspireFest. AIB are also looking to work more with women in business and recognising the important role of women entrepreneurs in a growing economy.
I think banks should pay attention to female customers, because if they don't, it's at their peril.
Carol Bulger is an independent director who has worked in banks for years and now works with women entrepreneurs.
Women are becoming much more powerful. I've actually done some research recently. I did a piece of work with AIB, and part of the work I did was to speak to lots of different women about how they felt approaching a bank, not just for finance, but approaching a bank in general. And we did this just after we had come out of the financial crisis. And what the research told us that women find banks in general, not specifically any one bank, but they find banks male, austere organisations and unapproachable. They don't think banks speak their language, and in fact, many women feel that they're not even important in the psyche of banks. But if women don't feel confident in going into a bank and articulating what they want, what they need, how can they ever fulfil their business ambitions? One of the main things that supports a business to grow and succeed and scale is finance. In Ireland, 20% of our SMEs are female-led. In Europe, it's 29%. So we lag Europe by 9% in Ireland. In America, it's 50%. And what we've realised is that women are becoming much more highly educated. 60% of graduates globally are women.
That means women are earning more, they have more purchasing power. We've also discovered that women are also holding much more senior roles in organisations in terms of purchasing power. So oftentimes at the front end, an individual might be dealing with a man, say, at the lower level in an organisation in purchasing, but those decisions in terms of procurement and the people that make the funding decisions are actually women.
The business of banking has traditionally been male-focused. When you look at the sponsorships that the main Irish banks are engaged in, they're primarily sports-focused and most heavily invested in male sports at that, rugby, GAA and golf. Perhaps if the banks had more women on their boards and executive leadership teams, there'd be less Rachel and Steve type advertising and more obvious support for the arts and women's sports.
I think that cohesive, inclusive language, which is I'm all about inclusivity, that to me is what's developing, but there's still a way to go.
From Dublin to London to Oslo and back, time and again, people talked about sustainability, and not just in a global warming way. Sustainability of the financial system is about putting measures in place to enable the banks to survive and to cope with future crises that are inevitable. Sustainability is about lessening risk, avoiding groupthink by bringing women to the decision-making tables at critical mass proportions to say, hang on a minute there, boys, let's dig a little deeper. Sustainability is about widening opportunity to a more diverse talent base so that the senior ranks are no longer dominated by male elites who played the same sports and went to the same schools. Sustainability is about lending to more women entrepreneurs, and it's about facilitating women's career paths as well as those of men. Sustainability is about cherishing all the children of the nation equally, male and female.
It is really the future of work. If we look at millennials, they are asking questions of us in terms of our future. They absolutely accept the future, and the future road is, they don't question gender diversity, they don't look at it in terms of men or women. So the future in the statistics is the millennials. So we absolutely need to get on the ship and move forward.
The future of Ireland is banking on women.
The ship is sailing.
Banking on Women was an Ocarina production, presented, produced and edited by Angie Mazzetti. Sound mixing was by Sean Byrne of Timpop Productions. The documentary was supported by a grant from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland from the television licence fee under the Sound and Vision Scheme.